Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Supercoach podcast. We are on the last recording for 2022 season. The season is now done. So we're doing the wrap-up podcast where we talk about everything that we learned this year and do a few slap me in the faces as we do every single season. I'm going to intro my main man. Well, he's not my main man. I've got a couple of main men. He's one of my main men, and that's Chizo. Hey, mate.
Mate, I've been looking forward to this podcast for about 27 weeks now, I'm glad that we finally got here.
Yeah, it's been that sort of season, I think, where after week four, I was like, oh, gee, this wrap-up podcast can't come quick enough.
But mate, week four, where were you? Like, I'd already given up at that point.
When I go through my ranks, I was okay by that point, but yeah, I wasn't far away, don't worry. It's good to have you, mate. Do you want to give your final rank for the season? But like, you know, just throw that out there. I'm sure it was higher than mine.
9,055 was the final rank. Very, very happy to grind out a top 10K finish after such an abysmal first 15 or 16 weeks. So positives to take into next year.
Excellent. Okay, let me try again. Pistol, how are you, mate? Do you have a lower rank than me?
I mean, of course. What do you mean? There was no chance you could end up beating you by 300 points. So it wasn't even close at the end of the season. But yeah, finished strongly with a final rank of 6,501. When I say strongly, I really... the last 5 weeks, I went from 7,000 to 6,500. So maybe not that strong.
Well, that's upsetting. From round 11, where I was ranked 11,027... gained 200 places to finish at 10,800. So a strong finish for myself as well, averaging about 20 place rank rise per week from then, which is, you know, steady green arrows, which is all we can expect in this game. It is great to have you guys on. We are, of course, sponsored by Code Sports, powered by Code Sports as per usual this year, which is great. Great to have them on board. We're going to go through some housekeeping before we get into the nitty gritty of the podcast and talk about what we learned and what we need to take into next season. We're going to start with the prize league. So, Pistol, are you aware of the prize league winners for the month?
Am I aware? I am aware of them. I can go through it. We had in third place, we had Meso's Muppets with 7,503. We had a three-way tie for second, which is the first time we've ever had that before. So that's obviously very close. General Soreness, Team Extreme, and Skank Hunt, 42. I'm sorry. They tied at 7,524. And the winner in the last month with 7,545, so only 21 points ahead, was Benny Buzzboys.
Benny, oh my God, a very generous contributor, Benny. He's been around for a very long time, and I remember him putting several drinks in front of me at the one of the catch-ups there. So Benny, always been one of my favorites. Glad to get him a mug. Not that I did it. I mean, I probably
yeah, good job, yeah.
Actually, but
take the credit.
Chizo, we have a random draw winner, as we do with the prize league. Would you like to shout that person out?
It's the Birdman.
Oh, God, the sound effects.
No, that's just actually a pigeon I brought in for it.
Oh, my God, that's incredible dedication. All right, Birdman, the random draw winner, winning a Dr. Zubagich stubby holder. There might be changes to the prize league next season, so definitely stay tuned to that. Exciting announcements probably coming in the off-season or pre-season 2023. So congratulations to the final month prize winners, Birdman and, of course, Benny Buzzboys. Now, we've got a lot of shout-outs to do on this podcast, by the way. Dr. Supercoach Cup winner. So who wants to take this one? Who wants to do the announcement here? Or do you want me to do it?
Well, you seem to be in charge of the podcast, mate, so I'll leave you up to the decision-making.
I just look to you for guidance, Jesus.
Look, I'll take it off your back for you. Mate, we had Dilza from All Gone, Pete Tong, taking out a 9-0 run up against DRSC Richie Rich in the final. Dilza defeating Richie Rich 25-39 to 24-55. And in the bronze medal, we had CJ the Stunned Mullet knocking out the number one seed Pommy DRSC Cherrapicker, who looked very, very strong about midway through the tournament. Didn't look like he could get knocked off, but CJ 25-14 to 24-19. All of those guys end up getting some merch. Pommy ends up getting some merch, being the highest rated coach with DRSC in his name, so he doesn't leave empty-handed. And the Dr. Supercoach Cup is being engraved late last week, and it's on its way out to Dill. So
incredible.
Some really, really good snaps coming up soon, as soon as he gets it.
And just a reminder, I don't know if we can pump this up as a free competition, because you have to be in the Patreon to enter, but you don't have to be in the prize league. There's no extra or additional costs above the base level entry into Patreon to get into this competition. So incredible value. I think we sink probably our second most amount of money just into this prize alone, and it's the cheapest competition to enter on our Slack. So incredible for those guys. Obviously, you have to be an incredible coach to get there. 9-0, as you said, Chizo. Just such a great run for Dilza. And you've won it yourself, Chizo. You obviously know how difficult it is, but you had Sean Darcy pumping out 160s as captain each week, but
and 60s, don't forget that.
I don't know if there were any 60s late.
There was a 60 season in the last round.
Okay, fair enough. Now, for us mere mortals, I usually go out in the second or third round, and I rig the draw for myself, so I don't really know what else I can do to get past that.
I was drinking, you idiot.
It's a difficult competition to win, so congratulations. Pistol, last coach standing, you've got your fingerprints all over that one.
Yeah, another free entry tournament, I guess, at the same free in air quotations, to be a patron to sign up. So yeah, more than 520 coaches entered, and the winner of the competition was Legion of Boom. So congrats to Josh. Big score, 2-5-1-9 in the last week to outlast all the other six finalists. So yeah, fantastic winner. And
that's crazy. Yeah, crazy. Which competition do you think is more difficult to win, Pistol?
Ooh, it'd be hard. I mean, it's a the head-to-head.
If you think about it, the last coach standing,
consistency.
Last coach standing, you're literally one against five, like one against the field for that last week. So you got to get through all the good coaches, and then you have to beat all five other good coaches in essentially a head-to-head.
Yeah, I think the LCS is probably harder to win because of the final three rounds are really, really difficult. You have worse than 50-50, I think, of being, well, roughly. I think the last 2 weeks at least are probably harder, as long as it's more than 50-50 chance of being cut, then statistically it's probably harder to win.
And you can't trade for this. You can't try to quell point of differences from the other teams, because there's five of them. you're going to have players left, right, and center. You really just have to back your team in to be the best, which Legion of Boom, unbelievable run by you. I don't know his Slack name. It's Josh, isn't it? Josh something?
It's Legion of Boom.
Oh, is that his Slack name as well? Yeah. Okay. Well, his actual name can't be Legion, so I'm assuming that's Josh then.
Yes. Well, it could be Boom's first name. But it's unlikely. What,
Josh the surname?
Yeah, potentially.
Well, we know Josh is in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Josh, congratulations. An unbelievable win. All right, now we've got a couple of Cancer Council donations to go through, and then I've got a little statistic for you, Pistol, going on from what we did last season for the Cancer Council in this last podcast.
Sure. We have a donation from Pistol. The Shuiper Stars lost a 500-point lead and then re-overtook me in the final round to win a head-to-head bet. So congratulations, Chris, and I hope your team loses to the Swans.
for a donation.
Well, look, who makes a bet when they're 500 points ahead on even grounds and then I ended up actually catching up but then lost in the final week? So
Shuiper Stars.
Yeah, clearly.
I think you shouted them out at the start.
JB, another donor that sounds familiar. He says, shout out to SC mates, Alex, Reg Rambo, Damien Maher, Jessica Trawarne, Gary, Judd Scheller, Donkey Magoo, Hee Haw, Matty, Jave, Daniel on Twitter for honouring the great Robbie Gray.
Those are the Robbie Gray trade-ins. And Chizo, mate, you missed out on a good score. I thought you were going to get him in.
And I told you, I ran out of trades once I went Tommy Stewart to Jack Sinclair to shore up my defence for the final round.
Sinclair to Stewart, you mean? The other way around? Did you lose points on that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so thanks for that. Thanks for the advice.
Scarily inaccurate on our final predictions. I mean, we were predicting tags. That happened, but for some reason, Clark just...
What did Gray score in the final week?
87, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it could have been
worse. I would have taken that.
And I think it was like two... He had two goals, four or something. Like, he really... Really should have been a bit better, but 87, you know, it's a good score.
Did you get any captaincies? Any $9 donos?
I got two captaincies, I believe. So Damien, nice. Well, definitely did. And
I still think captaincy should have been doubled.
What, $2?
Yeah, because captaincy doubles your score. So if his number is 9, it should have been an $18 dono.
double the $9.
Yeah.
Maddie JH did as well. He's in the Slack, but he also had a go ship team he hadn't touched since round 12, so
he just logged back in for the first time since April just to make it donate. Did.
He even said so, which I respect. And Jia, Jaya, Jer, Jar, Jarry.
That's a donation, surely.
He did a God, trust me, these letters everywhere, mate. It doesn't make sense. He did a captaincy in Dream Team, which I also honored. So good job,
Aaron. Oh, nice.
I doubt the scoring Dream Team was 87, though.
That takes significantly worse. JB, the total donations raised for the Cancer Council to $24,707. Unbelievable effort from everybody. Thanks, everyone, for donating this season. I mean, I can't wait for next year to crack the $25,000 mark. That will be incredible when we're so close.
So, Pistol.
Yes.
We, this year... Actually, let me start with last year. Last year, we raised $3,000
awesome.
For the entire season. The year prior, that $3,000 broke the year prior's record by about $30 or something. So it was about $3,000 the year prior as well. But we've gone back-to-back on records. This season, we've raised $8,354.
Holy cow.
Thus, more than doubling our previous records.
That's incredible.
So, unbelievable effort. Another shout out overdue for the Supercoach DRC vets and the DRC youth gang, young guns,
youth
young
gang.
Bucks, whatever that want to be called.
How do you do, fellow kids?
I've seen Jacko in real life and he threw up nothing but gang signs, so I'm just going to assume that's what they all do. Those lot all obviously contributing a major amount of money to the Cancer Council this year. So much appreciation goes to those fellas. I won't name names, but I do recall as a Coombe and Butler. And
immediately also, names names.
No, I know, but I'm not going to name names. All right, fine, I'll stop then. Those three specifically were unbelievable.
No, fantastic. Thanks again.
I was going to give more good shout-outs, but obviously they don't deserve it.
No.
We're going to move on. Patreon billing. So before I get this drastically wrong, Do either of you two know completely and entirely what we're doing with the billing in the off season?
Yes. So the September payment will be processed, and that 1 month, for anyone that hasn't signed up and wants to get some fun over the off season, it's basically a 1-for-3 deal. So you get October, November, and December free. There'll be some content still coming out on Patreon, some non-Supercoach agree to disagree podcast content with UJB, which we love that. And then yep. We'll be doing some pre-season stuff as we lead into Christmas and get ready for the Triple Ds in January. We usually do a team picker kind of mid-December and stuff as well. So mm-hmm. There's that to look forward
to. Supercoach horse racing. The big one.
Yeah, and the horse racing and BBL that we have in Slack each year. I'm trying to crack. Last year was pretty good. JB, I came 8th in normal Supercoach and then 25th in horse racing. So if I've come 9,000th this year, surely that means I come like 45,000 in horse racing this year.
Yeah, extrapolate that data and it doesn't look good for you. Maybe skip horse racing.
I wish there's 45,000 signups for the horse racing. That would be a good season.
But we do as we saw last year, we had the Supercoach horse racing podcast and stuff, which this year is probably just going to be within Patreon, yet to confirm. But hopefully we'll get the boys back, and they were really, really influential in a lot of the success that we had in Slack for horse racing last year. And we'll see if that can continue.
Absolutely. So FBL is also active at the moment, as will NBA be shortly. Then obviously we're all in there gaming and doing all sorts of other things, preparing for Supercoach 2023. And then obviously the actual app will drop itself in December. So look, just unbelievable value if you sign up now. You might be thinking, I've wanted to sign up, but I want to see what I'm missing out on, but don't quite have the knacks to jump in and pay the full price for however many months. This is a really good way to just dip your feet in the water and just see how you like it. So, just good opportunity for people.
We've got the AFLW fantasy as well going on.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah,
are quite keen on it. So that's going on at the moment, which is exciting.
Great. So that's pretty much going to do the housekeeping, the 15 minutes of housekeeping that we do. This last podcast always needs such a long, long housekeeping section. So if you're still with us, we appreciate it. We are going to talk about Supercoach. We're going to talk about the season that was the 2022 season. That it's funnily enough, I had to listen to last season's. I got to listen to last season's podcast that we did around the same time doing the wrap up, and we were all so giddy and up and about. And I actually shouted out my rank of 1800 with shame. I said 1800 and my head was like lowered because you two both went top 100. A lot of Slack went top 100. We read out all the statistics, which we're not going to do this year because we only do that when we're up and about. But it's going to be such a good comparison looking at this year's podcast and what we've learned compared to last year, with the sort of, you know, interchangeable ranks that we've now had. So we're going to start off by talking about the most important thing that Supercoach 2022 had to offer, and that is the rule changes. The several rule changes that we went through this year, we learned in the preseason of and tried to perfect, but obviously see our ranks didn't quite do as well as a lot of the other community members in just nailing down these rule changes. And I think we've learned, I personally have learned more than ever in any other season of Supercoach, including my first ever season of Supercoach, more about the game this year than ever before. So I'm going to start us off with the 5 additional trades plus trade boosts. Let's have a discussion. I'm going to start off with you, Pistol. I want to know what you thought of these rules and how they would impact you going into the season and how that opinion changed as the season went along. And I know for a fact you've got a really refined point of view on these rule changes now and how we attack them next season.
Yeah, so I think that the 35 trades and the trade boosts was a real winner for Supercoach. I think it was
absolutely
a super positive change to the game. I couldn't speak more highly about how, I guess, fun it was as well, particularly early days. Even though my season was quickly derailing, I was pushing I was over 40K going into round 7. But it was still really fun with the boosts because you could just boost every week and you're like, you get to say boost, which is a fun word to say, and you change large parts of your team. So I think that was a massive win. It was really enjoyable, so big kudos to the Supercoach team for coming up with that idea. Firstly, 35 trades. I think it's a lot of trades, but at the beginning of the season going in, I didn't think that it was as it mentally probably wasn't as many as it ended up being in practicality. Like, I wasted a lot of trades this year on either sideways or just a couple of stinking trades, and still ended up having trades at the end of the season, which I had Taranto as cover as well at the end of the season, which I would usually never have a premium cover, and I had done all these bad trades. So 35 trades is a lot more than probably what I was expecting at the beginning of the season, which means that in terms of starting position and strategy for next season, I probably would do things very differently, although I think maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. Specifically on trade boosts, I think that part we got right in terms of using them early.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the trick was to use them and grab, I guess, the fallen premiums, such as like the Sicily or the, you know, Darcy Cameron, any one of, you know, Cripps or Hewitt or whoever the cheaper premiums were. The problem was using them on the wrong people, which you're not going to get it wrong every year, hopefully. But in terms of using them correctly, I think earlier was better. We saw quite a lot of teams just not use all their trade boosts, and then there's no benefit of keeping them really, because at the end of the season, like we predicted, you weren't really going to use three trades in like round 19. You were just going to use one and then maybe one and then maybe one. But using them early did get teams, you know, to full premium quicker and let you get more premiums quicker as well, which was a big win.
Can I jump in?
No, that was the end of my rant.
I feel bad jumping in now. all right, well, let me throw this to you then, Chizo. We thought in the preseason, and I think we adjusted to this on the fly, we thought we'd be saving most of our trade boosts for the buys. That didn't turn out to be the case. I think we adjusted accurately, but what are your thoughts on that? Because I know a lot of people did save it for the buys and exited the buys with trade boosts remaining still. So I think we made the right call, but would you do anything differently next season? Do you feel like you need one during the buys?
So I was one of those coaches that actually held on to, I think it was two trade boosts for the buys. Actually, it might have been three.
Perfect guy to ask then.
Yeah, I think I boosted going into a three cash grab, nothing in round 12, and then 13, 14 went boost to do my final three. Counterintuitively, I actually felt like I had less flexibility because as I always do, I plan four moves ahead and sort of this guy's going here and then that I'm going to have this much money to get that guy the following week and then he's going to drop. And so what I found is it didn't give me any flexibility because I was already allocating those trade boosts to do things. And so when someone ended up getting injured, I think it was round 13 where we had like a dozen of our rookies just not named.
Yep.
I'd already allocated that boost somewhere. And so it didn't actually give me any flexibility whatsoever in order to actually cover that. And I ended up with a donut. I think I ended up with two donuts that week because it had already been allocated. So I definitely went against the grain and held on to my trade boosts a little bit longer than I had predicted. Sort of played a similar style to what I did last year where I just kind of let everyone appreciate and then trade them all out in a big flurry. It didn't work out, not only because of the players that were unavailable, but it was no different to having two trades that you already allocate and then someone gets injured. Except now I felt like I was digging a deeper hole. Because not only do I have to make three moves this week and three moves next week, but now I've got two other people that I need to move, and suddenly I'm like eight trades in the hole just trying to straighten everything out. So I think they're probably not necessary going into the buys. I think next year I'm going to be a lot more aggressive. They're clearly the benefit to them this year, which I think Pistol was the first person to bring it up, was just simply use them to get your upgrade cadence going earlier and more successfully into the season. And I think next year I might keep one for the buys if I have a poor buy structure, but otherwise I will just spend more time. So another thing is I didn't really give myself the flexibility during the buys this year because I didn't think it would be needed. Like, I've got all these boosts, I'm going to be doing 12 trades in a 3-week span. But the problem was once I'd allocated them, all the flexibility had gone. And so I think I hadn't put in the buy structure planning that I usually would have that made me succeed last season. And so particularly this year was a real wake-up call that even though we have 35 trades, which I'm going out in a limb and saying my personal opinion is that's too much. It's too catered to the casuals and there's not enough punishment for making mistakes. That's just my belief in the way that this game should be played. Just the lack of flexibility and the upgrade cadence starting later than everyone else, it was just impossible to catch up.
Yeah, so from my perspective, I kept one of the trade boosts for the buyers. However, I used all my other ones prior, but it didn't actually even make it to the buy. So in my buy planning, I did have a trade boost active, but in round 11, I popped it anyway, just because I think Bontempelli became a must get, and I just had to find a way to get him in and get a couple of rookies in around him, which also it did assist my buyers anyway, but. I thought I'd be doing that trade later, and Bond just went on a spree of 120s, 130s. He had a really low break even going into that first buy. So I did it with the thought of I'm going to hold it for the buy. No one else has held it. I'm going to get an upper hand here. But I think the boosts this year did what hopefully they're going to do every year, and I think they just made themselves. They pretty much picked themselves. And some people used it by round 10, like they just had to boost their way out of certain holes or wanted to boost their way further ahead. However, they used it. Some people used it by round 10, not round 9 even. Even earlier, I've seen cases of people using it. And that might have worked out for them. It might not have worked out for me. I think the boosts just do a really good job of identifying themselves as this is the week to use it for your team. So don't feel pressured to keep it for the buyers because... I think, Pistol, you and I had a few discussions about this during the season, is like, what are you saving it for if you need to use it now? Like, you're just assuming later on in the season you're going to have this exact scenario where you need to use it then is going to come up. But why count on that when you've already got that scenario right in front of you right now? Like, what pressure do you feel to save that trade boost? So I feel like that sort of discussion should be had as well. I think this is an aspect that we nailed quite well as well.
To ask a question, I guess, to help, how many trades did you actually use during 12, 13, and 14 for both of you? Like total?
12, 13, 14?
Yeah.
That is a great question.
I used 8 trades.
So you used 8 of your possible 9?
Yep.
And I used 7. Chizo, how many did you use?
I used 9.
Okay, so even...
with the boost in there as well, right?
With a boost. But I also used 3 going into round 15, so it was picking up round 14 players coming off the buy, so I still kind of consider that part of the buy planning. So collectively, between rounds 11, round 11 and round 15, I used 12 trades in a four-week span.
I think we were full premium much earlier than what we expected as well.
I think so that's where I was going at with JB when I asked that question is think to make, I guess, a combined point of Chizo's the lack of flexibility, I got stifled my flexibility in the buys because I was fully primo at like round 13 or so. And it meant that I didn't really want to trade in the buys because I was going to end up just sideways trading premiums for no real reason. So it made me hold my trades, which I then didn't have that good of a buys compared to other people because, other people obviously were upgrading through the buys and sideways trading, but I had already, I was done. I was like, well, what do I do now? I think what I would do if I had my time again was I probably should have kept pushing. Like, I ended up, as I said, with Taranto on the bench, and I made that decision in round 18 to do that, but I could have done it in round 14 and just played with an extra premium. I saw a team that got sent to me at the end of round 14 or round 15, and they had two premiums on the bench.
Yeah, wasn't that the one that had Nick Dacos at like D7, M9?
Yeah, they had Dacos, and they had, I think it was Tex as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember.
And I was thinking, well, I just stopped when I hit 22, because that's what we kind of typically would do in a normal season. But I think if I just kept going, then, you know, I would have had another premium through the buys to bolster my scoring. But you just kind of, the mindset wasn't there for this year, because usually you would get to 22 and you'd stop and you'd reassess. But if you have the trades, you know, we could have probably just kept going. And that's maybe what I should have been more aggressive during the buys, rather than playing still really, really, I guess, passively at that stage, because I'd been aggressive earlier and I thought, oh, maybe I'll slow down. But probably should have just kept putting the foot on the gas at that point in time.
So can I try to change our mindsets for next season a bit? So instead of having five extra trades to get full premium, should we consider that we've got one extra trade, but full premium is two premiums more than what it usually is to try and get bench cover? Do you know what I mean?
Maybe one.
So we got one extra trade. Sorry, did I say two?
As in two extra premiums. That's a lot more premiums.
But we've got five extra trades to get those two extra premiums.
Yeah,
so if it's one up, one down, two extra trades. Do you know what I mean?
You're culling faster. So I personally only culled Durden early, but I think other people, when you've got the boosts and you're using it before the buy, you're probably more likely to cull rookies a little bit too early just because you can. And then, I mean, this year may have been a bit of an outlier with how many cheap premiums there were. So I think you could probably...
So should we say plus one premium?
I think so.
And then, but is that a good way to look at it? Because, like you said, you stopped, but you might not have been, quote-unquote, what we should have been looking at as full premium by getting a guy on the bench. You weren't at that yet. So you should have, like you said, kept going until you had that extra guy on the bench.
Yeah.
Which would have helped your buyers also, and had better cover throughout the season. For example, you probably would have kept Zach Barnes if you had Taranto on the bench at that time. So, or someone equivalent. So I just wonder if... Yeah, I wonder if that's something that we sort of just take into next season as a different mindset. And Chizo, you said you alluded to the fact that 35 is too many trades. Mm. Is it too many trades for a 23 premium team? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a good question. The reason that I say that is it does nothing. It doesn't really change the way that we play the game all that much. It just makes it slightly more aggressive and more fun in the opening rounds. I don't know what it was like for you guys, but I came out of the buys with the same number of trades I've always had. You know, if we're using them before the buys, it's actually not changing the game all that much beyond being able to do more fun things in the beginning. So
can I
when
jump
you
in?
Cut, yeah.
Sorry. It's just, I think this year as opposed to last year, I think that's mostly just because we stuffed our starting team so badly. I think that we're going to talk about our starting team soon, but the structure that we had in our starting team needed fixing, and we spent trades to do that. If we get a good starting team like we did last year, the trades could be extremely impactful. You could be coming out with those five extra trades or two or three, whatever extra
trades. But how many trades did you come out of the buys with,
Jesus? Five.
Yeah, okay. I had six, and I would typically have like three. So
yeah, I had five last year.
Yeah, but yeah, you did have a particularly good season, though. I think.
Yeah, that just goes to show that it's probably too many. You know, like I've come out with the exact same amount last year, took so much incredibly in depth and thoughtful planning, and this year just
went the seat of my pants.
I fixed up so many things. I was sidewaysing. I missed out on Hewitt. I missed out on Cripps. I missed out on Rowell at the beginning. I missed out on Jack Hayes. Like, there was just so many people that I had to fix in my side this year, and I've come out in basically the same spot. And now that we're basically saying, hey, 2023 and beyond, there's no point holding these boots. Let's just go ham.
Yeah.
We're really just concentrating those five extra trades in the first half of the year anyway, which is not really fundamentally changing the game long term, because that's what we've always done. You know, we've always tried to use 25 of 30 to get our team perfect and then have a couple for the last half of the year. Now we're going to be using 30 of 35 to end up in the exact same position, maybe an extra guy on the bench that's a premium, and still have five to get us through to the end of the year. You know, like, even with everything went wrong this year, I still was able to go, what am I going to do with my final trade for 3 weeks? And then just ended up swapping Stewart and Sinclair. And it calls me back to, I think, JB bringing in Matt Crouch, or I think it was for the final game a few years ago.
I traded him out. He was at 140.
Yeah, something, and you lost points on that. Like, it's certainly, I don't think, going to fundamentally long-term change the way that this game is played. All the fun is going to happen in the first 10 weeks, as always, and instead of spending 20 trades, we're going to spend 25 and have 10 trades for the last 13 rounds. But that's just the way that I sort of have come out of that. But the other thing that I noticed with my team, I ended up with the exact same team value as what I did on my top 10 year last year, which I found interesting that with the additional five trades and in such a poor, pathetic year that I've had, it's still generating the same amount. So I think like our figure of about the 14 million mark of being like a really well established and team that you've invested wisely in to generate that team value, we need to up those estimates to maybe an extra premier on top to maybe 14.5 mil to represent the extra trades that we have.
Geez, mine was 200k less than last year.
I don't want to look.
There you go.
I had way less money available, so something went seriously wrong for me somewhere.
Well, not in your ranking, because you still, maybe team value is overrated. Maybe that's what we're coming to here. Okay, so did you guys have any more discussions regarding the trades and boosts that we want to take into next season?
I think it was a good discussion. I definitely can see where Cheese is coming from. I think
I agree with you both.
Fundamental change probably isn't in the back half, but more so in the starting team and how you structure your side. And that's probably where the biggest impact is on the trades now that, you know,
the risk profile is going to change.
Yeah.
I think it's exciting to know that if we do get our starting teams right, which most years I think we do, we could be looking at one or even two premiums to sit on our bench, or an elevated rookie that we don't have to trade plus a premium elsewhere, like having a Dacos and a Tex on your bench type of situation. I think that prospect is exciting to me, to know that I'll be rewarded for nailing my starting team, whereas usually, like we know, you come out with five trades instead of two, but the same team as everyone else. But to now have better cover as something of a reward, I think is exciting, and motivates me to nail my starting picks more so next season than when I have in the past.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
So Dan Houston's back on the radar, boys.
Can I jump in one last thing there, JB? I'll ask you, what do you think in terms of opportunity cost about the whole having a Bontempelli on the bench, like a premium on the bench sort of situation? Seeing as it seems easier to get to a full premium side and then have like cash left over, instead of taking so many value picks at like say 500k mark, do we start being like just picking off, say, when Oliver or Laird drops from like 700 to like 610, rather than actually waiting for what we would consider to be cheap, inverted commas, for these kind of guys, like say Petrarca that mid-year, we just go, yep, that's cheap enough. Let's just get as much cash on field with these amazing players and still rely on rookies on the bench. So like rather than having
for a higher full premium team.
Yes.
For example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're always going to have trades to sideways these guys. And if we've got them, we can pick anyone else because we're not sidewaysing a Zach Butters that's underpriced.
Yeah, I get you. I guess if I had known what I know now, I wouldn't have traded in like a Zorko for 520. I would have just paid up for a Dawson or something that you guys were looking at, who you guys sort of
exactly what
with.
I mean.
But I think besides that, I think we did do a lot of picking the right guys at the right price. But we have to remember the guys who do drop in price, depending on the reasoning, can be still the best 8 premiums in the game. I had Petrarca in that list up until I owned him for a month's time, in which case things, but he still came home strong and still, I believe, finished in the top 8 midfielders in the game once you consider games played. So I think total points he finished in there. I'll have a look at that. But essentially, I still think we picked the right guys with the right rationale. I just think that some of those guys luckily become lower priced than what you would be paying up for if you sort of ranked them where you thought they'd finish the season. So Petrarca at 580 or whatever we got him at, as opposed to what we thought we valued him at the time, is still a good deal regardless of how many extra trades we have. So I think if we can just keep on picking the right guys at the right price, then we can have enough money for both. It's such a tricky game when it comes to picking the right guys at the right price, isn't it? So, for like Petrarca as the example, I genuinely had him in my top 8 midfielders prior to him becoming affordable. And then even when he did become affordable, the rationale between for his low scores was there. And I still had him in that boat. So it's only after witnessing him sort of go on that poor run that I thought, okay, I've cheaped out on the wrong guy here. But you have to sort of consider the rationale at the time of trading them in. And Petrarca, 8th ranked midfielder for points scored this season. So
9th on average as well. So it's not like there's people missing out because they missed games. He's still right there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's really difficult. I think we can do both. I think enough players get a tag or a concussion or an injury that are still going to finish in that upper echelon that we can do both still. And that's 8th ranked midfielder, by the way, with Jack Sinclair in there as well.
Yeah, so that's true. And and Bont, if you want to be picky, he's up to 7.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just think, I think we're still doing the right thing there. I just think this should give us more opportunity to do both. What do you reckon, Pistol?
Yeah, I do agree to an extent. I think it's dangerous to draw conclusions from a 1 year sample size as well, because this year more than ever.
What do you think we're doing here, Pistol?
No, just this year more than ever, and with all of the things that we're going to talk about, the mid price has really hit this year. Like, we're talking when Merritt was low.
They just hit Hildberg, different this year, hey?
They did hit
Darcy
different.
Cameron. I mean, even Gresham, Charlie Curnow, all these
Brody
guys.
Brody Cornelio.
They pretty much all hit. Somehow JB chose Zorko when he was like the only one that didn't hit out of all of them.
I didn't choose Zorko.
No, he did hit. He hit way too hard. He needs to go sit down for a little bit.
Too many people.
So I don't think that's going to be a typical year, in which case I do tend to agree with Chizo's thinking in that, maybe for the boost, instead of using it to get more premiums quickly, which is definitely a valid strategy and was essentially the winning strategy this season because of all the value and the mid prices going well. If that's not the case next year, then it might be using a boost to cull an extra rookie for an extra 100K, and instead of picking Zorko at 520, you pay 620 for Stewart or something like that. I'm not sure, but it just the option's on the table, and it's something we'll have to look at when we see the prices for next season.
Okay, so I think we're ready to move on to DPP additions, which is the next rule change. As we go here, we might not get time to complete this podcast. We're talking a lot about it, which is great. We got a lot of thoughts, so it'll be good to reflect. So DPP additions, I don't think is a rule that we need to discuss heavily. I just need to ask, I'll start with you again, Pistol, because Cheese and I sort of had the last word on the last thing, but I think in the preseason we identified that we might not want to start fringe players in case there is a lot of DPPs that stand out to us, for example, the Bontempellis. And I think we strayed a little bit away from that by the time it came to picking our first team. Do you think we were on the money with that prediction in the preseason, or do you think we started our teams correctly? So I can't quite remember everyone who got given forward status, but right now, just having a look, Bontempelli was the number one forward. He got forward status during the year. Luke Parker was number four. He also got forward status. I can't remember if Libba started with it, or he got given it as well. So that's three of the top four forwards all getting given forward status during the year. Is this going to be somewhat of an anomaly, or should we be looking to start less premium guys in the mostly I'd say the forward line is where it becomes most relevant in years going forward, I should say.
Yeah, look, I think you have to is a short answer, but I think the better question to answer for this podcast first up, JB, is just what do we think of the DPP changes and was it a success for Supercoach?
Can you just answer my question first?
Yeah, and then well, that's why I said yes, so we could move on really quickly from it.
Oh, you didn't want to elaborate whatsoever.
No, because I'm going to be a circle back guy, but I think it's important in terms of the context of why or why weren't the DPP changes successful. So it adds context.
Right, well, giving one-worded answers, I thought they were amazing.
Okay, so I think that if you have 30 trades, DPP changes are really good for the game. And if you have 35 trades, the DPP changes are terrible for the game. So
this is going to be a real interesting... How have you come to this conclusion?
So essentially, I think it was... I think both in the rule changes... Like you couldn't, I don't think you could do both with the DPP. I think you had to just do one or the other. And the reason is because with the extra trades, it meant that one, all the starting teams became somewhat similar in terms of everyone being light in the forward line so that we knew the DPPs were coming and we could upgrade there. And two, everyone was upgrading to the same people because we knew Bontempelli would be the number one forward. And then as soon as like Parker was available, it was like, okay, well, everyone should get Parker. And then Libba came and I couldn't afford Libba. But everyone was targeting the exact same people in the exact same rounds as well during the upgrade time. And this was periods of time where people are actively making their teams better by doing their trades, but you're not moving anywhere really in rank because you're all targeting the exact same people. And you have to, because Bontempelli finished number one on his line. There wasn't a choice to just fade Bontempelli and pick him up at another time of the season. I mean, he averaged 8 more than any other player in his position. Like you had to get him. And
he played a game less than anyone else in the top like 6 players. And finished 50 points clear still.
Look,
that's unbelievable.
I don't think it's healthy for the game for everyone to have to target the exact same people. And, you know, as someone who writes articles, and I was purposely, you know, throughout the year trying not to double up on articles or things mentioned, you know, in the Herald Sun when we're writing for Code, so there's a bit more variety. But sometimes you're looking at it and you're like, geez, like, I have to say to get Bontempelli this week because realistically, it's the best option, but it's not just the best option. Like it was kind of at the stage where it was like the only option, which was a little bit disappointing. And I think because of the trades that we have, the extra trades, like it really encourages people to go after these deep, high, you know, midfielders that become forwards and try and get as many of them as possible. So I didn't really like what it did with our starting team because we're forced.
Can I contest this a little bit?
Yeah, go for it.
So Josh Dunkley had 64% ownership, started as a forward.
But why?
Brody had 54% ownership, started as a forward. Heaney, 45%. Canelio, 58%, started as a forward.
Yeah.
Those guys all finished top 7 in the forward line. Yeah. And those guys are all more highly owned than
but Luke Parker, who had 30%. Think about that for a second.
Bont, who had 35%, and Liberatore, who had 9%.
Yeah, but you're not looking. I mean, that's a really easy one to just dismiss. Firstly, plenty of the teams go ghost ship, and you said they started with them, which I agree with. They did start with them, and then they ghost ship, so the ownership.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Never drops. Secondly, you have the same, everyone knew that more forward DPPs were going to be added to the game. So it meant that we were forced to pick Dunkley because we knew he would be in the top six. So everyone got Dunkley, so his ownership rocketed. Then we were like, well, the mid prices, we need to get them because then we can have the option of trading them to, you know, the DPPs that get DPP throughout the season, like Bontempelli and Parker. So people got forced into taking the Cornelios and the Brodies of the world. I mean, they were good picks in their own right. But the reason their ownership is so high is because there wasn't that much variety. I would have loved to have seen all these starting teams that had, you know, Hawkins or, I guess, I'm going to say Butters.
Good run coming up.
You know, sorts of like Bolton, people...
Ew.
Like Zach Bailey.
Those players are bad picks regardless.
I mean, they're bad picks when you have Bontempelli and you have Liberatore and you have Luke Parker. Tom Hawkins finished ninth for total points for forwards. If you don't have those three, he's a top six forward. Then he's not a bad pick. And you're not going to argue a top six forward's a bad pick. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But
I could. Give me time.
I totally see where you're coming from, Pistol, that it pigeonholes us into a template-type strategy for those that are expecting incoming DPPs. The counter for that I would say is that it's not entirely different to what the rookies do for our sides anyway. You know, like, we'd love to go three premiums, two mids and a rookie on field in defence, but if you've got no rookies down there, you have to go one deeper. Like, just think of the year before where a lot of us didn't have a single rookie on field, or and we were kind of forced into that. So I feel like it's just a new element to the game, and I'm not saying that I disagree in saying that it's good or bad. I just see it as another variant to that sort of aspect of the game that already exists. The thing that I've already stated, I think it's too many trades, in that I do agree that the 35 trades plus DPP is making it a little bit too casual friendly, in my opinion, which I guess for their product is what they want. They want people to stay around for longer and be on their platform. But I think inherently the game may not find personal enjoyment as much by it coming across that we do get pigeonholed into this additional aspect of, well, I'd love to pick these three guys, but I can't. I can only pick one, because what if Bont appears in round six and then he doesn't appear? And you're like, okay, well, we're all chasing after the same people now. And so I totally agree with where you're coming from, but I can also see how it's reflected in other aspects of the game that's already there. But I'm probably 60-40 on the negative side, that if you add the amount of trades and the DPP and the way that teams are all chasing the same players, I think it's probably not as beneficial in terms of quality of life for the game, but it's probably great for the quality of people having fun hitting that really addictive trade button.
So, Cheezo, I do agree in that the rookies, you know, dictate the structure. But, you know, if there's a very limited amount of rookies and we're all forced into a similar structure, like, that's a actively, like, negative on the game. That's something that we don't like. And then you add this into it and you're like, well, why am I adding more of a negative? Like, we're trying to fight that. Yeah. So that's where that comes from. And playing AFLW Fantasy this year with the expansion clubs, I know it's a, you know, strange year because of the expansion clubs, but there's so many rookies across every line that you can pick any structure you want. You can pick, you know, you're going to pick, you know, X amount of premiums, but literally every team that you see has those premiums in different positions. So every team is so unique just because there's just such a large amount of rookie options. And that's something I think Supercoach should somehow be trying to, you know, get to that stage. I mean, I don't know if it's lowering the prices of the first round draft picks, and, you know, people might say, oh, well, then everyone will pick Dacos. But the thing is, everyone's picking Dacos anyway.
They need to stop pricing McCartan at like 180 when he should have been at 102K. I think they do this themselves.
But everyone.
And they talk about how much, exactly, across the board. I mean, they do this and they talk about how much they want this to be a more casual-friendly game, but then their pricing just seems so harsh. Like, players like Cunnington, who's just had a season off and averaged 50, he's not going to get priced at 50, is he?
No,
like,
they won't.
They'll manually choose to price him at like 75.
And it's likely the same as like Taron Thomas and players like that, who would be unbelievable bargains, who would all love to open up our structures next year and to sort of pick as really good enablers to have us pick. You know, I might want to go five deep in midfield. Pistol might, you know, fancy the forwards and defenders more, or go, you know, two deep in ruck, whereas I don't want to. The higher they price these players and the more essential they become as actual players, regardless of their price, the more we get forced into this type of structure, which we hate. So I think the pricing by Supercoach can change. I think there's scope for it to change. I don't think it will, though. So I think we are going to get forced into this. I just call back to like Liberatore, 9.1%, and not to disagree with you, Pistol, but just to sort of offer a little bit of a silver lining in the fact that these players might be desirable, they might become forward status, but you still have to be a good enough coach to get them in your sides. We've been saying all season that Liberatore is a good pick, and 9.1% of coaches were able to get him. It's probably because Heaney and Cogs were so highly owned and you know, they're not sidebasing one of those guys to him. But I'm just saying that there is still some hope for alterations in sides coming up to the last few weeks at least. So, it's hard to talk on because like, there's so many factors. We just want the game to be perfect, but it's just never going to be like that, unfortunately.
I think.
Remember when you introduced this topic, it was like, we're probably just going to brush over DPP because it's not that important. What did you think? I liked it.
I think, JB, you're right. If you oversaturate the market so that there's so many good viable options, everyone's team will be different. I think that's what Supercoach has been scared to do. As you said, Cunnington giving him, you know, not giving him a discount when he should be priced at whatever, you know, 180K or whatever it is. Like, obviously, Cunnington, I get it. Everyone will pick him at 180K. Maybe it can't be that price. But if you price, you know, Fife at whatever, 300K, I'm sure is going to be, but you don't manually manipulate everyone's price. So you're like, you know what? There's actually 12 really good forwards, exactly, but I can only pick eight of them. And my eight that I pick might be different than your eight, especially if rookies are 123K across the board, for example. Then I'm not comparing, you know, Horn Francis, you know, at 212K, and I'm looking at Cunnington at 212K. You know, that doesn't make sense. But then I have to pick, hey, is it Cunnington or is it number one pick plus 100K versus Cunnington? And then it becomes, you know, a lot more enticing. So I think the answer to making everyone's team much more different isn't actually forcing the template and making people choose between that way. I think it's just giving us an overwhelmingly large number of options that are viable and then letting us pick our team from that. And yeah, I guess dumbs the game down furthermore. But in combination with 35 trades, it'd be frantic, but I think that's probably the way to go about it for engagement.
It'd be more interesting. I think both ways, I think it keeps the quote-unquote experts happier. And I think it keeps the casuals happier as well. And it's like their solution is to drip feed us these good options. But by the time the season starts, these options have probably half ruled themselves out with other injury or role or fitness or the coach, whatever the coach says. So if they drip feed us, you know, six options next season and then three of them rule each other out, then we're all picking the exact same team all over again every single season. So it's like they don't account for the fact that these guys might not actually be viable options by the time the season starts and they price them in December. So, it's super interesting. I think altogether DPP is a positive change because I think enough can be done about it to really make it one of the most interesting and enticing things about the game. And that's looking forward and hypothesizing, and players that traded in Bailey Smith traded in an absolute dud until he got forward status, and I appreciate that. But it's also got its drawbacks, and like I don't think the trade boost, for example, has drawbacks. I think this does.
Yeah, it's interesting when I think about the season as a whole. Like the most, probably the one of the, I guess I'd say most fun, but it was painful for me, but fun for others. The most fun part of the season was what you do with Cornelio. I mean, you had an option of either keeping him, and obviously we know how that went. He becomes a top end premium, or you sideways trade him at his price to another premium and see if, you know, that premium's going to outscore Canelio. And the people that traded him out inevitably lost that battle most of the time. And
I did.
If you lose, if you have...
There's a third option.
Yeah, win the battle. If you have 12 really good forward picks, and I've started, you know, five of them, and I think, well, I have the eighth best forward. Do I want to gamble on, at this very point in time, trading out my player to Tom Liberatore, but Tom Liberatore is not guaranteed to outscore my original player. One, you increase variety of teams because not everyone's going to pull that trigger. And two, like, that's an active decision that you have to make that may make your team worse as well. So, yeah, I think that's probably the direction that I would like to see the game go.
Nah, just keep the trade boost, but go back down to 25 normal and 5 boosties, and then keep DBP and everything's sweet.
You could do that as long as you lower the prices correctly. More yep. variety. Yeah.
Lastly, we've got the edit trade function, which I utilize once or twice. If I had have known what Chizo told me in the last couple of rounds, I might have utilized it more. Chizo, what did you discover about the edit trade function late in the season?
Round 23.
Yeah. Well, I think the edit trade function is something that's been necessary.
It's been great.
I think on the whole is amazing. I think the downside to it is literally just in the back end coding and the way that it presents itself on both the website and the app. Because early on in the season, I was hanging out with a few mates and we were playing some X-Golf and having a few beers and pizza and stuff. And then I did a trade and then it was mid-round. I tried to reverse it. And not having the reverse trade function because it becomes update trade became very difficult in the way that it presented itself on the app, in that you have to like work backwards. There's no button to say like this, like with one click of a button, it'll just flip everything back. I found like I had to go, you could choose between updating the trade in or the trade out section. And I remember having this conversation with you, Pistol, yeah. where we were stumped for like an hour trying to figure out just how to make it work. Yeah, and then yeah. I was like, I literally had to like work, like it's not even, it was like a double reverse. Like I wasn't trying to, I wasn't picking the guy.
Pythagoras and theorem is like in the background.
I wasn't picking the guy like that I previously had on my team to come back because like it wasn't registering. That's what I was trying to do. So I couldn't actually click his name. I had to realize that I had to trade out the guy that was in my side and then like swap DP because DPP became involved. And then I had to remember that this guy went there before it could let me click on the, like you literally had to work backwards to get it to work. And I was just yep. like, there must be a simpler way. And it did improve as the season went on. But what you're actually referencing, JB, is that when you're looking at your team on the field, it used to have like an undo changes or an update trade functionality sitting right there. But then there was like a section that was like you could like show your buys, you could clear trade, you could like, there was like a drop down arrow and it was like undo or update, undo changes yeah. Rather than reverse trade or update trade. And then in undo changes, it would then take you to your most recent trade. But the way that it presented itself on the app and the website made it look like that if you had used your last trade, that update trade tab had completely disappeared. And it wasn't until I got asked on Twitter like if you could do it and I messed around on the app that I realized that if you undo changes, which is what usually reverts everyone back to the bench and changes your C and VC from last week, rather than just updating the trade, you could then manually input it yourself. So there was still a way, even though you used your last trade, to update it. Whereas as the year was going on, we were using another trade to bring that person back in, which would refund our trade. So there was actually two ways to use the one functionality within your team. And I just felt like that was not presented as well as it could have been.
But yeah, for something so awesome.
Yeah, and there was a third way. You could click on the player that you brought in, hit the trade button, which wasn't on anyone else, and then take you to the trade screen exactly, and then do that. So there was actually three separate ways to do the one functionality, and they were all literally different. Like, there was no coherent one way of doing it. They all presented it in three separate ways.
And it's a functionality that we usually have to like pretty much matrix hack the site to do last season.
Yeah.
And then they introduced this great update trades thing, which overall, unbelievable functionality. We couldn't be happier with it, besides what you pointed out earlier. And we were like, okay, we can now do this hack thing, but we have to have a trade available. And it just turns out you don't, which I think is pretty cool as well. So something to remember for next year, if you've used all of your trades for the week, you don't have to boost, you don't have to do anything. You can still update your trades and trade someone back to the first person. I'm confusing myself. Yeah. But so that functionality does exist despite you not having trades available, which we thought didn't. We thought we had to keep one handy. So look, I think overall great functionality. I don't know if we need to really discuss it.
No.
Pistol, did you have
anything that agreed. You wanted to totally, jump into? Totally or? Agree with Chizo. It was just... It was too much. I could the one-sided in and out and trying to figure it out, like I couldn't do that method. I had to use a different one.
Yeah, so, it seemed like it just wasn't coded to perfection.
And literally round 23, and we know this game, well, we felt like we needed this game inside out. Round 23, I posted the question in the chat. I've been asked on Twitter, do you guys have any input? And none of us knew. And you actually said, no, Pistol. No, yeah, that's not possible. You need a trade. And I was like, well, I just did it. You're like, what? I got it right, show though. Me. And I had to literally screen record my app for you to be like, wait, hold on. I could have used that all year.
Yep.
Because if you had used all the trades for that round, you were just like, oh, well, look, I can't do the reverse trade because I've used them all.
Yep.
Whereas like the whole time you just had to click a completely different section.
I'm glad we found it out now. That's I might have to re-listen to this podcast going into next season to get my head around it again. But
I haven't finished complaining. When are we getting rid of the four emergencies? I'm sick and tired of having a laid out and not being able to have my second playing bench player come on the field. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, we're going to discuss things we'd like to see in the game, JB.
Are we going to do that? All right. You know what? Yep. I'm going to scratch out things we learned regarding our starting team because I think we've pretty much covered that with the rule changes. all right. Let's discuss some things you'd like to see in the game. We've updated this on the fly. All right. So Chizo's already alluded to the emergency system, which I think absolutely is overdue for a revamp. The issue that you alluded to then was... if you had two guys that were laid out potentially during the round, but you didn't know it until, like I said, in the very last game, you would have liked to have emergencied two guys on that line, but they'd already locked out. So you had the cover there ready to go, but they're locked out as non-emergency because when you do emergency both players, you get the lowest score. So you get punished for emergencing both guys, but you actually needed both guys for cover that round. And if they just lock out before that last laid out, you just tough like you get a donut entirely. So, really tough punishment for actually having cover for guys who are laid out. So I agree. I think the whole thing needs a bit of a revamp, and maybe just I don't know. You could get rid of emergency completely, or just prioritize your emergency, but still have everyone as an emergency.
Yes.
That type of system, or you could just we've spoken in the past about having a nominating someone to go into like a specific bench spot, like a what is the word I'm thinking of?
Utility.
Like it can be, a utility spot. Or like a couple of guys to go in utility spots that just cover the entire field, or something like that. So I don't know. There's a few different ways that they can do it, but I think just being able to, it's like this is my number one on this line, this is my number two on this line, but I want both guys to cover if I have two outs is surely. Surely there's capabilities to be doing that sort of system.
Yeah, I've said this before, and I had a response being like, "Oh, they only have four people on the bench on in real footy," and I'm like, "Well, yeah, I get that they're trying to mirror it in a little bit of a way, but we've already got 22 players on the field, so that's already not mirroring
we've
it.
We've got
a stack on the bench, and we can only choose four. Just like." If you want to make it easier for everyone involved, including casuals, just take that away where you can just rank each week like 1, 2, 3, my three midfielders in this order. So as a donut appears, that's
the player. I captain a non-playing player like every week and they're like, we need this to be more realistic, guys. Like, It's just not realistic. Well, it's a fantasy
that's
game.
That's where my...
We've just got Tickle running around with a broken collarbone with the armband just like, come on, guys!
That's what I mean.
That's where my...
He makes his debut every week.
My suggestion would come in then is, because we keep getting that feedback, I just think nowadays teams don't have two dedicated rucks in their side. Like, very few teams do that anymore. I just make one of them a utility spot on field. And let's just do that instead. One ruck and then utility spot.
Yeah, but utility just equals ninth midfielder, right?
No, because you can't
afford it. Yeah, it does.
Not necessarily, because you won't technically... Could you afford an extra midfielder this season? Like, you might not be able to.
I mean, if I didn't start a team of potatoes, maybe, but...
But then that could add in variety as well on how you use it. Plus, throughout the season, it opens up strategies of where you want to upgrade throughout your season, because you can shift different people to the utility spot or whatever it might need to be. I think there's potential there. I don't think we necessarily need two rucks, especially when there's not many options to choose from. Like, very few ruck options are, you know, we're able to choose from. And the other one, JB, which I think we're all going to agree on very quickly, is please build the three-way DPP swaps into the game.
Yes!
Disagree.
What?
No, I just wanted to... You said we'd all agree really quickly.
It needs to happen.
Build it in, please. Like, we do it. Everyone does it anyway. And it sucks when you run out of trades and then you can't do it anymore. And it's just a little unfair that happens when you could do it throughout the
especially
whole
season. Especially now with DPP swings. Yeah, like, it's never been more relevant.
Please.
Yeah. I mean, what you're alluding to, just to, in case the god of the Herald Sun is listening, having someone in defense, midfield, and forward. All of them with DPP eligibility. You cannot swap those three players, just, you know, your forward to the midfield, your midfield to defence, and your defence to forward, without actually having to trade someone in that's not currently in your team and won't be in your team, and then trade them back out again to the player that is currently in your team. So, massive pain not having that functionality. And yeah, with DPP coming in and being more relevant than ever this season, please implement that.
We're gonna end up with more situations like that. It used to be like a little bit rare, but this year it's gonna happen. I mean, like, moving forward,
it
happened already a lot this year.
And Taranto,
yeah, Himmelberg,
and I was like
Himmelberg and Mitch McGovern at different points of the season. Absolutely,
we just need that so badly now. Everyone gets DPP, please.
What else? What else do we think?
I think they're the main ones.
Every single player in my forward line has DPP, even my bench players.
I'd still like them to implement something that softens the injury blow if it happens early in the match, but I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah.
I know AFL Fantasy or Dream Team, whichever it is, draft teams have a rule that you can implement where if they play less than a certain percentage of the game, you get the emergency score instead.
Yeah. It can work for sure. I don't know if that it's probably a lot more work, but yeah, totally can work.
Yeah, no, it probably is a lot more work, but I think it definitely improves the quality of the game. It's just harsh getting, like, a concussion can derail your season, and the price drop is already brutal enough. So
yeah.
I don't know. If it's possible, then I'd love for just that to be in, like, future planning somehow. But they might just like the randomness and the harshness of the competition at times, which is fine as well, I guess. But I suppose it's like all things are equal. So I'm just saying, if my captain goes down in the first 10% of the game and scores a 5, I'm going to be pissed.
All right. What else is on the agenda?
Give me my VC. All right, well, if that's all the discussions you want to have in regards to changing the game next season, then we can move forward to discuss just quickly, retrospectively, looking at our captaincy and trade decisions. I don't even know how much I want to talk about this, or like how much of a deep dive, probably not much of one. Just firstly, how do you think you guys went with captaincy this year? Did you learn from last year where you both said on the podcast that you could improve and that you can just choose safer guys? Pistol, I say this to you every year, you suck at captaincy, and every year you admit that you do, and every year you say that you're probably just going to copy me for the next season, and then every year you don't, and then every other same year that we have this conversation, we look back at the points that you could have gained, and I don't know why we're not splitting up 50k by now.
Look.
So what's happening next year with your captaincy, because you sucked again this year?
I think, I mean, I had worse results this year in my captaincy than last year, because my results this year were horrible.
Nice.
But I think I was better at sticking to what I had said last year, whereas I really was rotating between Oliver and Neil. So I shouldn't have, and at the end took. So I was picking the midfielders, which I think were the right people. But the problem was I didn't own Laird, who was far and away the best captaincy option for the second half of the season, where he was just banging out 140s every week. And I didn't have that option. And when I was rotating between like Oliver, Took, and Neil, I was getting all of the 100 flats. I got so many 100 flats this season, like more than probably I've ever had. So I think I chose the right people that I had in my team. But I missed the highest averaging player in the entire game in Laird. So I was kind of a dead man walking in that regard.
I mean, I didn't have Laird either, and I was pretty good in captaincy still.
Yeah, the opposites of the Neils and the Olivers to myself. We went the other way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this doesn't just apply to you. It might not even apply to you at all. I just think I get asked a lot about captaincy, and especially considering you lot keep pumping me up as the captain guru, which I really do not want that name sticking because it's too much responsibility. But a lot of people were DMing me, especially on Twitter as well, and just saying, "Hey, I've got these guys in the gun as my captaincy options," and it's just so complicated. It's like these guys have like a 3-round average of 84, but one of those was a big ton, and now you want him to be your captain. I think people just overcomplicate it. I think it's correct to look into matchups, but identify teams that are giving up big scores. Identify if you have a high ranking midfielder in that game, and there's an easy one of your two options right there. And then, you know, look at your form players, look at who they're playing. If it's not someone that's going to tag them, or someone whose midfielder has been like intentionally restrictive towards others, then, you know, there's your captaincy. So I think people just go far too deep dive and far too left field on their captaincy option because they're, you know, they're chasing the exciting Petrarca, 4 goals, 30 touch, 160. Where instead, I'd rather just get an Oliver 130 every week, or a Neil 130 every week, or Took Miller versus North Melbourne, you know, bang, there's a 150 sort of thing. So I would chase
104.
Yeah, I know it didn't happen in the second part of that one, but I would chase the matchup with my VC and chase the consistent scorer with my captain. Is pretty much how I've got it down to as a bit of a science. So matchup dependent with the VC, and then consistency with the captain. What about you, Chizzo? How do you think you went with captaincy?
I don't think I went too bad. I had Laird for most of the year, so I just kept putting the C on. certainly, I think I learnt from last year. I wasn't perfect in terms of not getting sucked into a guy that's going to go 180. I think there was a couple of times where I turned down like a 121 or a 123 only to end up with like a 97 from Neil, and like I turned down 118 from Oliver and ended up with 104 from Took. So I think there was one instance where I picked Neil over a 125 ish and lost about 30 points, but there wasn't like last year where I think I turned down like a 130 from Ridley as a VC and ended up with like a 70 as the captain. Like I've been like a little bit more consistent with just taking 120s and just moving on. But as I said, yeah, over the course of the year, sometimes you do just get sucked into a good matchup, a guy that's averaging 135 in his last five, and everything just points in the right direction. And then you're like, why am I always getting sucked into this? You know, it's like, why am I always getting sucked into bringing in Whitfield?
Yeah, I think I lowered my captaincy to about 115 for most of the season, just because a lot of people were copying like tons, like flat tons or sub tons, because of like random taggers or just like Port Adelaide. I remember this one versus Melbourne, like both Petrarca and Oliver sub-tunned out of nowhere. For no reason whatsoever. There was no tag. It was just one of those weird games where everyone sub-tons. But that seemed to be happening a lot this season. So I feel like I, at least in my own mind, lowered my vice captaincy to about 115, 120. It's 100% if it was over 120, then it was taken. So yeah, I don't know if you guys
why?
Ended up lowering yours.
Yeah, so this year was strange where we only had four people go above 120 with Took Ride on 120, and you didn't own Laird. So you only had three players, the three I was rotating between Oliver, Neil, and Took, that went above 120. And then there was only three more addition to those four that went above 115, whereas last season I felt like we had a good
20 of us.
Yeah, we had heaps. So genuinely, the threshold had to be lower just because that's how the season was playing out in terms of averages.
Well, I didn't pick up on that. People, I was still chasing 120.
Yeah, I don't know if enough people adjust on that.
I mean, I didn't. And I'm just looking at it right now.
I think it's crazy. Like, and especially if you miss like a Lockett Neil 190 and you see a lot of people get it, it makes you want to chase that score a lot as well. So, the captaincy, vice captaincy is big time. It is such a mental game sometimes. And you really have to be disciplined. And chasing the high scores, I want to say rarely works out. Like chasing the big, big scores of your secure 115, 120 plus rarely ever works out for a large gain. So, I think we need to get Nico, the stats man, to have a bit of a look at and a comparison and maybe just tweet at us what we did, what we turned down and what we took in terms of captaincy this year. I think it'll be interesting. But, surely, I mean, next year, Pistol, right? Like, you're learning.
Next year, fingers crossed.
Okay, I kind of want to just get into the slap me if I don't start.
One minor comment, very minor comment.
Yeah, go for it.
In terms of trading in throughout the season, I think we had adapted throughout the season, whereas, round six came up and we saw Darcy Cameron and had a bit of a laugh at the option. And then a couple of weeks later, he was dominating, but we had the opportunity to take a Himmelberg that was basically the same sort of deal as Darcy Cameron, came in low price but very high potential scores. And then at least I took the opportunity that time. And I think that I don't want people to think their lesson learned is I'm going to make a team full of mid-prices because it all works out this season and that's what I'm going to do in 2023. I think the lesson learned is we probably got very lucky with a lot of the mid-prices, but through the season, when there's a mid-pricer, usually we would be, you're only trading in premiums. But I think if there's a mid-pricer that has backing that's been scoring really well, that, hey, because of 35 trades, it might be a good opportunity to bring them in. If they do badly, I'll trade them out 3 weeks later, no harm lost. Or they could just be an amazing keeper. And I think that's where I'm taking, a bigger lesson learned than my actual starting team.
Is there anything more important than the eye test when it comes to a mid-pricer?
No. It's just like, the eye
test. In terms of role and potential future output, I think Himmelberg sort of speaks volumes. Is like, if you watched him for that 140 or whatever that first defensive game was, you knew, like, if he kept getting reps there, he was going to average bananas numbers. Like, he was so good at it immediately. And he had kickouts from that game on. That's all you need to see. Aaron Hall the year before, another great example, with you identifying him via the eye test. The mid prices, I think the game is so difficult if you don't watch enough football to sort of secure these guys and convince yourself of them as a good option. I saw Himmelberg. I didn't have I can't remember why I didn't get him. Whether it was trades or something else, but he was one of the players that I identified as someone who was just going to absolutely dominate the season. And he really did. I wish that the move happened earlier and his price was really juicy at the time. So I was very envious of the players that were able to get him in. But it goes to show a little bit more in things that we learn is that, like, you really need to, even if you can just get on the highlights of the game and just scout why this guy scored this amount from a price of 420k after averaging 60 for the year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's super important. Okay, now, a segment that we love, a segment close to our hearts, slap me if I don't start. Do you guys need the history lesson on this, I assume?
Yeah, I've got no idea.
Okay. I've pretty much... You received your slaps last year for the players that you hadn't started that you said... Slap me if I don't start. So I'm not going to dig into that history. I will advise that Pistol going into last season, going into the last year's review, was 0-2 on players starting. Chizo was 0-2 on players starting. And I was 2-0.
Wow.
So we said in the podcast that we could be a little bit safer, but it still had to be a player who we predicted having sub 10% ownership going into the, you know, the first couple of months of the season before preseason. So Pistol, if you recall, you chose Took Miller as your slap me if I don't start.
Yeah, and he had lower ownership because we only went with very few premium midfielders and he wasn't the top of anyone's real pick. It was mostly the Neils and the Olivers of the world. I mean, I started Took over Oliver, so I did badly with that. Oliver was the second in terms of total points. Oliver was number two and Took was number three. And so somehow I've chosen the third best player in the game and it was the wrong decision.
The good news is that, oh, because Oliver's always, anyway, the good news is that you are now one and two. So no, you've repented for your prior lies. I'm going to get your fourth player from you shortly. Chizo, going into the slap me if I don't say you were 0-2. You backed in your guy, Sean Darcy, who took you to the promised land, the top 10 finish. And Chizo, did you start
Sean Darcy?
No way,
did I?
Yeah, you said slap me if I don't start Sean Darcy.
Oh, God. No, I definitely didn't start Sean Darcy.
That, you are 0-3, Chizo, so I'm... Cop that.
I'm glad that you slapped yourself. That took one for the team.
Can you just break to the noise like a slap you because people think we're in a studio? Okay, just... Can you please just one time just be cool about this whole...
Ow, JB, that hurt.
Ouch, Charlie. Okay. Ouch.
Pistol, you didn't get slapped, all right?
JB hit me.
And that really hurt.
Okay. All right, you guys aren't taking this seriously. Chizo, you're 0 for 3. I'm gonna move on to mine. I was 2-0 leading into it. Now, you guys... I said Butters, and you guys got really upset at me saying that, you know, that's good, not good enough, blah, 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 blah. He's going to be started by 100% of the competition.
Yep.
So I said, what about the combination of Butters and the Goey? And you guys allowed me to do that. However, I didn't start the Goey. I had it for a very, very long time, but his preseason antics and just lack thereof preseason in general convinced me otherwise. Also, the whole DPP thing coming in. Convinced me otherwise, so I did not start to go here. He was in a couple of my drafts, but did not get in the starting team. So that's my first miss. So I'm 3-1 because I counted Butters. God, it's mid sentence. Let me finish what I'm saying. I deserve that. All right. So have you guys thought about this year? Who should I start with?
Shit. Not.
Oh, well, he's not on the podcast. I can't get him on. Any other person I should start with?
I'll
no, he's not here either.
I'll go first.
Okay, so Jesus, God, Pistol, all in the same vein.
There's so many options.
There are. But remember, we sort of need to start someone slightly left field.
I think this person won't be started because they'll be too expensive and other people will go for safer options. So you can...
Okay.
It's kind of like a Took equivalent of last season, but...
Seems really safe, but go on.
I don't know if I'll start them. Feels like too big of a call to lock in now given the price and the other really good options. But what do you think of Jack Sinclair?
I think it'll be like 620K.
I know. It's really expensive.
I like it a lot because pretty much, if I can get his scores up here, he had against Port, who are the most restrictive team against defenders in the league, Melbourne, who are very, very close to that same title, and a Ryan Clark tag, he did not sub-ton for the season. So those were the three sub-tons, 85, 83, 79, everything else was 100+. He's like the new Jake Lloyd. I'll be surprised if his ownership is low there.
So I can or I can't pick him.
I'll let Chizo be the judge.
Yeah, you can have
yes.
it.
Yes.
Really? That's insane. All right, Jackson can play that. Sure. Do you have anyone, Chizo? I've got someone in mind.
Actually.
Can I just ask for permission on my guys? Because I might not be able to get them, and then you can go, Chizo.
Yeah, sure.
Can I go for another combination?
Yeah, okay.
Can I go for, if they're both forward eligible, the Port duo, Butters and Rosie?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can.
That's out there? Okay.
I think that's so if both, enough if that both it's players, worth you selecting to your starting team.
I can't believe you're spending our one swear per season.
That's true. I waited to the last moment to sneak that into the season as well. I'm like an hour into the final podcast of the season.
Are you talking about all Australian Connor Rosie being bad at football? Is that what I'm gathering from you?
It's a risky combo in the forward line because you know there's only a limited number of forwards that you want to pick before the DPP rolls in. So I think it's risky
enough.
Slap me
if I don't start Zach Butters and Connor Rosie together. All right. Next season, if they're not both forward eligible, then I'll amend it. I think they will be though.
I think it's a fair combo.
Thank you, Chizzo.
I am doing what I usually do, and going out on a limb, knowing that I definitely won't start them.
No. Do you understand the point? You don't want to get slapped again. You just got slapped earlier, and that one hurt.
Charlie,
slap me if I don't start. Tom Green is a Richmond midfielder.
Ooh.
That's good, actually. That's a good one. He's not cheap.
Wait.
He's not cheap.
Can you expand this to whichever GWS player goes to play midfield at Richmond?
No.
Because I want this to include Taranto as well.
Taranto will be forward eligible, so he'll be a good pick if he goes to Richmond or Collingwood.
Yeah. Okay. So no, I think the upside in Tom Green, so I honestly see Tom Green has the potential to go from 97 average, which is what he's done this year, to jump straight to the 110s. Like if he goes to Richmond
or Collingwood
and gets or Collingwood, more Richmond in my that's why I specified Richmond because
what is the difference?
I just feel like the absolute superstar that is Jack Crisp just will take too much of his mid time away. I think he's going to have less competition at Richmond, and if given the right role, I think he has like a very similar profile to what Oliver had in his second year, but he immediately just got given the role that he needed. So lack of competition. Same sort of play style, has also shown that he can go forward and hit the scoreboard occasionally too. He's only going to be priced about 525 to 530k, so he's in the slightly higher range than what I prefer.
But you got more trades. But so.
But I've got more trades that I can take. I think the one thing that I learned from my starting squad this year is I went way too safe. And tried to go guns and rookies and just stayed away from these like sort of priced guys that like the Sicilies and whatnot that just went gangbusters and just destroyed like my season. I just feel like given the role, he's going to be that one that we're chasing after round two or three. It's just like, oh God, he's got the role we want. He's going to go 110 for the year.
You know who I chased after round three this season who destroyed my year?
No, please do tell.
It was Tom Green.
Oh, I should have made the connection. Yeah, he did actually have a ripping start of the year.
Yeah.
He? What was his average?
Yeah.
He was at 130 after
three.
Oh,
my God. Yeah, okay. This isn't as safe as what I thought it was. Averaging 111 by round 10.
Yeah, I had him in. So good luck is what I want to say. And I think there has to be an asterisk.
Oh, my God. 50, 49, 55, 105, 125, 58. That's a good... He's just brought his price down just perfectly for next year.
More affordable. He did what Zach Butters should have done, apparently.
If Rosie is mid only and Tom Green doesn't go to Richmond, do I win by default?
We could come up with backups, or we could just change like on a win preseason.
All right.
Or do I want backups? Let's do backups.
Someone take Himmelberg, please.
No, I'm not touching Himmelberg.
No thanks. You had your pick.
Jesus, can I take Himmelberg as a backup in case Sinclair gets injured in the preseason?
You had your pick. You had your pick.
I reckon I'm going to pick Jack Steele as an underpriced likes of Took, Oliver.
He'll be 80% owned. He'll be 80% owned.
Yeah.
Yep.
At 110, like he's got value, but he doesn't have like insane value.
Nah, it'd be owned by everyone.
All right. Well, that's my backup. I went out on a limb, I get a cheapie.
Okay, my backup is Clayton Oliver.
Oh, come on. feel like you guys are taking...
Pistol literally said Jack Sinclair.
Where's the LDUs and the Himmelbergs of the world?
LDU is the one that I paused on for the longest, but I don't think I want to start.
Where's the Chads?
I make my punts forward and back. I don't make my punts in the midfield. Day-crosses? That's the thing. Well,
no. Give me something. Right, come on.
Fine. Slap me if I don't start. Give me a Rowan Marshall. That's my backup to the Port boys.
Don't give me a Rowan Marshall. Who did you say?
No, Nick Dacos if the Port guys don't get it.
Slap me if I don't start David Swallow. Binger.
Slap you if you do start him.
Yeah. All right. No. So I've got here backup. JB has Dacos and Chizo's backup is Errol Goulden.
I wrote David Swallow because that's what he just said earlier.
Okay. No, before we lose the plot, I think Dylan Moore could be one. Sorry, I've gone on a train of thought here.
You know what? Just for that pistol, you
and
can
that
do
train
the
is derailed.
Yeah, it's definitely derailed. All right.
You can do the outro for that pistol. I'm at my wit's end.
No, thank you, everybody. For getting through another season.
Willem Drew could be a good starting pick.
Is Dangerfield done? He's 400k. Yeah, he's he only done, averaged 83. He's actually done, isn't it?
Do you reckon Oscar McInerney offered 105 3-round break even?
No.
Thank you, terrible. Everyone, for another great year of listening to the Dr. Supercoach podcast and sticking with us throughout the whole season. Cool. We hope you had a good time.
Tyson Stengel.
At the end of the day, that's what Supercoach is all about. And we look forward to coming back and doing it all again next season. So thanks to all the loyal supporters. We really appreciate you. I was going to say, if you have any questions, you can find us on Twitter. Hopefully there's no questions because the season's over. So too bad.
Thanks, Walker.
And thanks, everybody.
Got it. Zach Williams.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.